For the record, I don't mind hugging. I'm not, you know. I hate it when my students are more evolved than I am. It makes me feel, you know. Actually, I love it. It's great. My talk title this morning, How Do I Love Me?, is a play on words from a poem written by a woman named Elizabeth Barrett Browning in 1846 called How Do I Love Thee? And some of you may know that poem. Now, the original poem was actually a sonnet in a book of sonnets. And a sonnet is a short love poem, and it's supposedly the words of a lover telling their lover how they feel about them. And as with most love poems, it's a little bit overdone, you know, but that's kind of the way we feel when we fall in love. We get all mushy, we want to be with that person more than anyone else in the world, and we'll say almost anything to convince them to be as gaga over us as we are over them. So let me read you a few lines from the original poem. And for those of you who haven't memorized, I took a few lines out to shorten it, but you'll get the point. How Do I Love Thee? By Elizabeth Barrett Browning. How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet needs by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely. I love thee purely. I love thee with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life. And if God choose, I shall but love thee better even after death. Isn't that beautiful? Wouldn't that get you lucky? I mean, that's just a beautiful, beautiful poem, you know? Now, it's not as good as my favorite romantic poem, which is from the Sufi poet Hafez, the poem where he has the line where he says, "Do not give your mouth to just anyone, but only to someone who is willing to cut off pieces of their soul with a knife and weave them into a blanket to protect you." You know, ooh, okay. Now, that's hot. But this one's still pretty good, okay. Of course, the purpose of poems like these is to put our most passionate feelings into words so that someone we really, really love understands how much we love them. But because words are so limited, and because most of us find it hard to express our emotions really, really well, lovers throughout history have made extensive use of the words of others, the lyricists, the poets, the troubadours, because these are the people who are very, very good at saying things in a way that we ourselves probably would never have thought of. That's why Hallmark sells so many cards with those little verses inside during Valentine's. But what I want to talk about today is an even more important relationship than the one we have or would like to have with a significant other. I want to talk about the relationship that we have with ourselves. Because very few of us put anywhere near the same amount of time, energy, passion, interest, or generosity into the relationship we have with ourselves that we do with other people. Now, a lot of wise people have pointed out that one of our greatest problems is not that we don't love others enough, it's that we don't love ourselves enough. In fact, that's what Marianne Williamson was talking about when she wrote those words that Nelson Mandela used in his inauguration, where she said, "We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, or fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world." And then she says, "We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us." In other words, for some strange reason, we have trouble acknowledging how wonderful we really are. And as a result, we find it easier to compliment other people than we do ourselves. Now, it's not our fault, really. That's just the way a lot of us were raised. Fortunately, most people who find their way to a teaching or a spiritual community like this one have figured out that this kind of thinking, the unhelpful, unhealthy kind of self-thought, while it may be socially acceptable, is not spiritually correct. We teach that love and happiness and respect begin in here, in each one of us. So that's why if you've been coming here for any length of time, while I was here, or Kennedy, my teacher before me, you've heard me or him say things like, "We are a divine idea in a world of infinite possibility." Or, "Each one of us is a perfect expression of a perfect intelligence." Now, we talk like that for a reason, not just because it's high-sounding or religious. We talk that way because it's hard to believe those kind of statements and not think well of ourselves. But if we truly want to love ourselves, there's more to it than just positive affirmations. Even if we've learned through years of practice to stop criticizing ourselves when we make a mistake or to stop beating ourselves up when we don't follow through on something, that's still a far cry from actually loving ourselves. That's just being nice, which is fine, but we need to do more than that. That's why we should be willing to look in the mirror any time of the day or night and say to the face in the mirror, "How do I love thee? Let me count the ways," okay? How do I love me? And then be willing to tell ourselves all of the wonderful things that we love about this person that we spend all of our time with. Because, as one of my favorite philosophers and mystics, Oscar Wilde, used to say, to love oneself is the beginning of a lifelong romance. All right? It's a great statement. Now, for some of us, the problem is not how we answer the question, "How do I love me?" It's how we ask the question. Instead of saying, "How do I love me?" we say, "How do I love me?" You know, the emphasis is on the wrong word. In other words, instead of thinking about all the lovable things that we are, we focus on all the unlovable things that people have told us that we are. We're continually running the tapes in our head of things that were said to us years ago by our parents, maybe, or our teachers, things we heard in Sunday school, and the parting comments from all of our exes from ex number one, all those comments we hear. Now, some of us were lucky enough to have heard mostly good things when we were growing up from the people in our life, but all of us heard at least a little bit of criticism. And the problem is, as Mona talked about in her talk last week, if we hear 100 compliments and one criticism, which one do we remember? What do we remember? What do we think about? What do we talk about? We talk about and think about the one bad comment. So the only way to change that pattern is to learn to love ourselves with so much depth and enthusiasm and conviction that our automatic response, no matter what anyone else says or any foolish thing we do, is to welcome the good comments and to smile and release the bad ones. And that takes two things. It takes clarity and it takes practice. So let me talk about those for a minute. Spiritual clarity, which is what we're talking about here, is absolutely essential if we are going to have a happy life. And by that I mean, before anything else, we need to get clear about what we are. Now notice I said what we are, not who we are. The difference is, who we are is true about us, but what we are is true about everyone, including us. You get the difference there? There's a big difference. So we need to get perfectly clear in our consciousness, which means giving no power or attention to any obstructing or confusing thoughts. We need to get clear about our oneness with the source of all life. And we need to do that because this source, which is what we call God or the Creator or whatever we call it, has no capacity at all for self-doubt, self-criticism, self-blame, or self-punishment. It is nothing but love, and it has no room for anything else. Now, something inside of us knows this. Something inside of us has known this from the day we were born. At least we knew it until we started listening to the people around us, who had forgotten long ago that it was also the truth about them, and eventually we forgot it too. But it's always been the truth about all of us, and it always will be. The sad thing is, we all know people, maybe some of us here in this room, who were not nurtured as children. Now, they may have been cared for physically, maybe had all the food, clothing, and shelter they needed, but no one ever just held them close and told them that they were a great kid and that they were loved completely, no matter what. Now, being raised without experiencing that kind of love from the people close to us is what we might call spiritual child abuse. That's really what it is. And what it does is it creates adults who don't feel that they deserve to be loved, which causes them to assume that they are not lovable. And people who grow up thinking this way find it difficult to give or to receive love because they don't know what real love feels like. When I started looking at my family history, I could see this kind of behavior going back 4 generations. From my great-grandparents to my grandparents to my parents to me and to my brothers and to my sister. And as I look at my siblings, I can see indications of it already moving two generations past to their children and their grandchildren. You know, lack of love may not be physically genetic, but it sure is spiritually. It sure is spiritually. So the question is, how do we break this chain? How do we create loving people in the world when no one ever taught them how to love? Well, that's the next step. After we become clear that love is what we are, then we need to practice. And the best place to practice is the place where we spend the most time, which is in here, in our heart, and in our mind. We start with how we see ourselves, and then how we think about ourselves. Then we go on to how we treat ourselves, and how we speak of ourselves, and how we give to ourselves. We have to practice doing these things all of the time, knowing every moment that we are made of love, that we are filled with love, and that we are a perfect expression of love. That is what prepares us to give love. That's how we break the chain. Now, we already talked about how we see ourselves and how we should think of ourselves. Now, let's talk about how we treat ourselves, physically, mentally, and emotionally, as well as spiritually. And let's start with our body. People who truly love themselves take care of themselves physically. They make it a priority. Now, I don't mean they force themselves to get up at 5:30 every morning and go to the gym unless they love doing that, and some people do. And they don't have to be vegan and eat nothing but organic vegetables and microbiotic or macrobiotic and all that other stuff. But they do treat their body with respect. They don't overwork, they don't overexercise, and they don't overindulge unless it's a special occasion. Okay, unless it's a special occasion. There's nothing wrong with a little playful overindulgence now and then. My personal motto is, all things in moderation, especially moderation. Get away. Think about that one, okay? Now, the good news is, we don't have to figure out the best way to care for our body. It will tell us. It will. If we exercise too hard, it will tell us. If we drink or eat too much or the wrong stuff, it will tell us. If we don't get enough sleep, it will tell us. If we're carrying a few too many pounds, it will tell us. But we have to be willing to listen to what it's telling us, and we have to respond intelligently and with love to what we hear. You see, contrary to a lot of the infomercials that play on television, we don't need to starve ourselves, drug ourselves, or beat ourselves into shape in order to have a body we love. We already have a body that we can love. The one you see in the mirror, that's it. That's the body you can love. Like it or not, whatever our body looks like or feels like right now, you and your body, or me and my body, are together for the duration. For the duration, in this lifetime at least. So criticism and shame directed towards our body, this body that we have created, is probably not going to be very helpful. Instead, doing things like pampering it and feeding it healthy food and letting it get plenty of rest and allowing it to stretch and to play will allow both us and our body to reach a happier balance. Now, another part of physical self-love relates to our surroundings. Do we live in a place that feels like home? Do we work in a place where we feel comfortable and creative? Do we spend our downtime in places where we feel safe and we can truly enjoy ourselves? You know, the world around us is a reflection of our consciousness, but it also reflects back and shows us how we really feel about ourselves. So dirty surroundings, cramped surroundings, unsafe, these kind of things are not acceptable to people who respect themselves. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, some of you I know agree with me, but I want to be surrounded by beauty and comfort, and a certain amount of order. Not too much, but, you know, just enough so I can find things, okay? I want to go on nice vacations, I want to stay in nice hotels, and I want to drive a car that I enjoy driving because I deserve these things, and so do you. Now, what else does this mean? Well, it means if you live in an apartment and you want a house, then get to work on manifesting a house. You're able to do that. On the other hand, if you're living in a house that's too much for you, then get something easier to maintain. Find a living space that suits you perfectly where you can be happy, entertain friends, and sleep like a baby. For work, find a workspace with windows and scenery and beautiful colors. If you work at home, don't just take the storage room in the back. Create the office that you want. You deserve it. If you love being in nature, spend more time outdoors. Go hiking, play in your garden. If you love being in the city, then once a month, rent a beautiful hotel room downtown and go to a fabulous restaurant and treat yourself to a fabulous dinner. Even better, find somebody else to treat you. That's even better way to do it, okay? You deserve it. We deserve it. We deserve all these things and more. Now, that's all the physical stuff. Now, loving ourselves mentally has two components: what we think about in here and what we allow to come into our mind from out there. So let me talk about those. Knowing what we're thinking about in here, what's running through our mind, is simply a matter of awareness. So that means we need to wake up. We need to pay attention. We need to think about what we are thinking about on a regular basis. Now, the good thoughts, the happy thoughts, are not a problem. When it comes to good thoughts about our life, the more the merrier. Most of us don't have enough of those thoughts anyway. Instead, it's the negative stuff, the angry stuff, the fearful stuff that causes us problems. And it causes us problems because we don't realize that these are just thoughts and we can change them whenever we want. It takes practice. If I start worrying, for example, about my stock portfolio, has anybody here done that in the last 3 or 4 months? Okay, none of you guys, anyway. If I start to feel scared and sick at 4:30 in the morning and I'm worried about this stuff, I should be able to simply step back and say to myself, you know what, that's just a fear-based thought and I'm not going to give it any power. And then I can start being consciously grateful for what I have. Okay, now there's an idea. Treat yourself to loving thoughts. What a concept. Who would have thought, you know? Does it work? Yes, it does. The positive thoughts that we practice putting into our consciousness will handle the negative thoughts the same way that light handles darkness. When the light comes in, the darkness doesn't go anywhere. It's simply gone. And the more we practice doing this, the easier it becomes. But let's talk about those thoughts that come from the outside in. I mean, you'd think we could just stop listening to the bad stuff, but as we all know, it's not that easy. Controlling what we allow to come into our mind from the outside is sometimes a little bit harder than we might expect because a lot of it comes at us from places like work or family or places or people that we can't avoid. Now, obviously, if we can avoid negative people or negative news or negative experiences, we should. That part's easy. Turn off the TV, turn off the phone, hang up the phone, get in the car, and go someplace else. There's a lot of different ways to do this. But if we can't avoid it, and we're going to be around it, we should learn to consciously focus our attention on a more spiritual interpretation of what we're hearing. I mean, sometimes we do have to tune people out, but we can also teach ourselves to listen to them, and instead of seeing an angry person out to ruin our day, we can see a scared or unhappy child inside of them trying to learn how to love itself. And when we see that, it allows us to feel compassion, which is just another form of love. That's better for us and it's better for them. Now, I'm not saying this is always easy, but I am saying that we have to do it if we want to be happy with ourselves so that we can be happy with others. You see, creating a more loving space for ourselves in the world around us almost always requires change. That's why we find it so hard to do. It takes effort. It requires us to consciously make better choices and then to act on those choices. But if we really love ourselves, it's worth it because eventually we end up creating a world around us that's much more pleasant for us to be in. Now, what about the emotional component, this last part? I mean, since love itself is an emotion and the most powerful emotion of all, you'd think all we'd have to do is to choose to love ourselves perfectly and then do it. But there's a difference between perfect love and loving perfection. There's a difference. For some strange reason, many of us have gotten the idea that we need to be perfect in order to be lovable. Now, it's hard enough being perfect for other people, but it's virtually impossible to be perfect to ourselves because we can't hide our weaknesses or our mistakes from ourselves. We know all the dirt. We know everything that we've been doing. Now, when you look at it from the outside, that's what's going on when we compliment someone on something and they say, oh, no, I'm not really that talented. I'm not really that smart. I'm not really that beautiful. I mean, even when people we love tell us how wonderful we are, we end up arguing with them. I don't know where that comes from. We don't have to be perfect to deserve love. In fact, perfect love refuses to look at imperfection. Perfect love refuses to look at imperfection. Perfect love accepts us as we are, warts and all, so that is the way we need to learn how to love ourselves. Now, there are a lot of creative ways to be self-loving without becoming selfish. And I say that because this isn't about ignoring other people and becoming self-absorbed or focusing on what we have at the expense of others. It's about doing the same things that we always do, but doing them in a way that constantly gives us the love and the respect that we deserve. For example, we have to bathe anyway, so every so often, why not do it with candles and bubble bath? You know, I mean, you got to do it anyway. We have to buy food, so why not buy food that we love that also nourishes our body and our soul? Chocolate's always a good choice, always works. I mean, we have to buy clothes, so why not spend a little more on quality so that we like the way we look? Now, the list goes on. Get a haircut at a good place rather than a cheap one, right, Robbie? Okay. Read books and watch movies that raise our spirit and expand our mind instead of those that waste our time. Meditate instead of watching the morning news shows. You'd be amazed how that changes things. Be around kind, loving, and generous people who support you instead of those who only want to share their misery with you. Now, these things aren't hard. They just take a shift in attitude. We need to start treating ourselves as our own best friend. That means we should stop saying anything to ourselves or about ourselves that we would not say to someone that we love. We need to transcend, which means to rise above our old self-image and replace it with the loving self-awareness that we were born with. We need to lavish upon ourselves the kindness, joy, compassion, caring, laughter, intimacy, nourishment, and love that we deserve. Simply because we deserve it. Simply because we deserve it. That's when we can feel free to share it with other people. Now, I want to close with this short quote reading, and it was from one of Wayne Dyer's earlier books. It's an older book called Your Sacred Self. And he says this. He says, "You know deep within you that at your primal level, you have been designed for love and happiness. You can choose to return to the brilliant light of love that is always with you. Who you are is that unclouded love. Go there often," he says, "and all of your fears will be replaced by the love that is always with you. There is no greater freedom." There is no greater freedom. That is a freedom that we all need to recognize, to accept, and to embrace. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Take a few deep breaths. Roll your head around on your shoulders. Relax for a moment. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. God is love. Spirit is love. Life is love. Love is the one, the only, the ultimate power in the world. And that love does not have to go from one place to another or one person to another because all is love. So all the love that we could ever need is right where we are. As we allow ourselves to recognize that we are that love, that it is how we are created, that it is how our body moves, our life moves, our world moves, and how our heart beats. As we recognize this and accept that love for ourselves, we are able to give an infinite amount out all around us. shining like a light, where everything the light touches becomes the light. Everything that love touches becomes even more of love. The love that is there is brought out. So as we recognize this, we know that we cannot be selective. We cannot love one person and hate another. We cannot love one person and throw another person out of our life. We love everyone because love itself is unconditional. It does not distinguish. We know that romance changes things. We know that friendship is a different kind of love. We know that the love of a mother for the child or a child for the parent, all these are different aspects of love, but true, deep, perfect love itself knows no boundaries. So as we become love and give love everywhere we go in terms of kindness, compassion, caring, ease, and non-judgment, we change. Our heart opens. We are no longer afraid. We are no longer angry. We no longer give anyone power over us, but because we know that we are such powerful love that we cannot be hurt. So I invite you to take a few moments in your life. And in these few moments, I want you to see in your mind's eye the person in the world that you are having the most trouble loving at this moment. See that person. See them standing or sitting there. And see them as a child. See them as a child yearning for that which we all yearn for. And allow yourself to lavish that love on them in your mind in this moment. Take these moments in silence. With gratitude and a clear understanding of the sacred significance of this truth, we allow ourselves to see this person in a new way, and by seeing them differently, we are transformed. By allowing ourselves to be present in the world as love, the world itself is changed. This is our truth. And with a deep appreciation for all that we have been given and all we have yet to give, we accept this truth. And we release it into consciousness, letting it do its good and perfect work for us from this moment on. And so it is.